From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Melissa Block. A pretty gloomy jobs picture emerged today. The monthly snapshot for June showed the loss of 125,000 jobs, much of that from temporary workers ending their work on the 2010 census. President Obama pointed to the sixth straight month of job growth in the private sector. We're heading in the right direction, he said, but not fast enough.
We still have a great deal of work to do to repair the economy and get the American people back to work.
Well, here to talk through this economic news and more, our regular Friday political commentators, columnist E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and David Brooks of The New York Times. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
Great deal of work to do, the president says there. David Brooks, do you think this economic recovery has stalled in a jobless way? Would you support calls, as we're hearing, for a second round of stimulus spending?
No.
In a word.
I hear those calls. I read about them in my own newspaper. And the calls have some plausibility. The people have a theory, and they have economic models to back them up. If you imagine you have what they call a multiplier, you'll get more jobs with government spending. But right now, I'm a little skeptical. And I'm skeptical first because right now the fiscal and monetary spigots are wide open. We're not seeing a whole bunch of job growth. And second, we're in a specific moment of high debt. And when you increase debt at moments like these to deficit spend to try to create jobs, you don't give people confidence. You freak everybody out. And small businesses are not going to hire because they're going to think big tax increases are in the future, and they'll know this growth isn't real. And so in this circumstance, I just don't think that kind of spending works.
And picking up on David's point there, EJ, how can Democrats make the case to voters that the first stimulus package worked if we are, in fact, still looking at nearly 10% unemployment?
Well, first of all, I always like it when David channels Herbert Hoover. I mean, Herbert Hoover basically said we had to cut deficits in order to create confidence so we could get the economy moving, and that worked out very badly. I think these numbers make an overwhelming case for goosing the economy a little more because the fiscal spigots are not open. State governments are raising taxes. They're laying off workers. Teachers are going to be laid off. That's going to hurt the overall economy. And I think Democrats should be pushing a lot harder than they are for the fiscal stimulus. I think in terms of the overall economy, I think David Leonhardt, David's colleague on The New York Times, had it right. He said the overall picture isn't so much of a double dip recession as it is of a badly wounded economy recovering at a slow pace. And I think to answer your question, it's not good for the Democrats. I think I feel personally gloomier about their chances now than I did a month ago for a variety of reasons. But these numbers are part of that.
David Brooks, you're going to take that Herbert Hoover analogy?
No, I'm not. I'm outraged. Listen, I don't think we should just have austerity. I think this is a moment to think fundamentally about the shape of the economy, have some fundamental tax reform, have some infrastructure spending, but not do it in a fizzy way where you're trying to goose short-term growth because it'll just scare everybody. So we need a fundamental growth agenda and not just austerity.
Let's move on to something else. We also saw and heard this week the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan, and we heard what have become by now very familiar complaints from senators about a nominee who would not show her hand. And let's listen to an exchange between Senator Arlen Specter, former Republican, now Democrat, and the nominee, Elena Kagan.
The kinds of questions that I have just raised, you wouldn't answer anything. And perhaps you haven't answered.
Well, Senator Specter, you shouldn't want a judge who will sit at this table and who will tell you that she will reverse a decision without listening to arguments and without reading briefs and without talking to colleagues.
E.J. Dionne, is this more than just a regular charade that we see when nominees go before the Senate? Did we learn anything about this nominee in these hearings that we didn't know before?
Yeah, you know, I disagree with the conventional wisdom that she simply danced around. First, I should say I liked her going in. I met her years ago on her earlier tours of duty here, and I liked her even better after these hearings, partly for her sense of humor. But I think she was very specific on two important things. First, she sees courts as having an obligation to defer to elected officials, except in the most extreme cases. That's a very clear view, and it runs crosswise to some of what the courts are doing. And you could say it runs crosswise to what some, although I don't think most liberals think now. But she also was very gutsy in taking on that umpire metaphor that John Roberts made famous.
Calling balls and strikes.
Yes, calling balls and strikes. She said it was robotic to view judging that way. And she said that if this were true, all cases would be 9-0, and that you have to make choices among values. In this sense, the Constitution involves multiple values. In this sense, she sounded a lot like former Justice Souter in his commencement address at Harvard. And I think that gave you a pretty clear sense of what she's going to be like.
David Brooks, did you get that sense, too? There were always questions that come up in these hearings about whether we're headed for an activist judge. Did you hear an activist judge coming through on the Kagan one way or the other?
I didn't see anything. I thought she was charming, funny, smart, bright, but I really didn't get a sense. I did agree with her rebuttal of the umpire metaphor. One of the lines that's been spread about this court is it's this 5-4 monolith, pro-business, very conservative. There's a great post, and I recommend on the blog, SCOTUS blog, which is an outstanding blog by Tom Goldstein, who tears that apart, who shows that only 20% of the decisions this court has reached are 5-4. It's rarely the 5 conservatives against the 4 liberals. Scalia and Alito are often against each other. So judging really is about discretion, and it does not fall on ideological lines. I don't think we have a sense that we know where she's going to be, but she certainly gave the impression of someone who's smart, intelligent, and fair-minded.
I'd like to take just a minute to talk about immigration. The president was talking about this yesterday, saying the system is broken. He says reform is being held hostage to political posturing. David, where do you think the immigration debate goes from here? Anywhere at all before
it's
November?
It's just going nowhere. Yeah. The Republicans don't want it. I'm not sure Democrats want it as an actual issue. They've pushed her rhetorically, not substantively. The fact is the country has become much more skeptical of any grand immigration plan until we do something about the border. That's just the way the country has shifted, Democrat and Republican.
EJ?
I'm afraid I agree with most of that. I think the speech itself was lovely and moving in parts, but it wasn't all that specific. What you have is a situation where, as Obama said, 11 Republicans who supported immigration reform the last time really aren't willing to go out there. Republicans have a strategy of not doing very much. They're afraid of their own base on this issue. And you're not going to get this done absent a lot of Republicans. The Democrats, who are worried about some political effects of this, don't really want to bring a bill out and vote for it if it's not going anywhere. Now, maybe they should just have the guts and haul a bill out and put it on the floor and see what happens. I think that's what the immigration reform groups are going to urge them to do. But I'm not sure that Obama's speech is going to get them over that line.
Okay. Thanks to you both. Have a great 4th of July.
Thank you.
Thank you.
E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution and David Brooks of the New York Times.
You're listening to NPR.